Hey guys, welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, Bill Connolly of ESPN joins me to break down the top five quarterbacks in this year's draft class. Which quarterback would he not be comfortable taking in the first round when he's popularly being graded as a top five pick? But first, wanted to tell you about another ESPN podcast. It's hosted by ESPN and Antscape contributor Dominique Foxworth. Yes, Dominique Foxworth, the Dominique Foxworth, my co-host occasionally on Debatable, a regular contributor to this show. He's smart, he's funny, he's talented, he's handsome, you get it, it's Dominique. Listen to his show every Tuesday and Thursday because it showcases Dom's unique perspectives in football, parenting, the NBA, and really anything Dominique finds interesting. It's a very good podcast, you know, because at least one time, every single time I listen, I have to turn it off because I get so angry at one of Dominique or Charlie's takes when it comes to usually the NBA, sometimes the NFL, but that's a good ratio. It is that good ratio of smart to I disagree, but it's smart to this is infuriatingly wrong. So as we gear up for the NFL draft, check out the Dominique Foxworth Show. Listen wherever you are listening to this podcast, which is about to start right now with Bill Connolly breaking down this year's quarterback class. All right, joining me now as promised here on the Bill Barnwell Show, making his annual appearance to talk about the quarterback draft class. It's my old friend from Football Outsiders, my colleague at ESPN, the best person in the business if you want to talk about the Bundesliga, if you want to talk about college football, it is my friend Bill Connolly. Bill, how are you?
I mean, I'm pretty good. If you want to talk Bundesliga, we can. I'm ready at all times, but I assume I know why what we're talking about here.
We can talk about the move to Thomas Tuchel. We could talk about Bayern just abandoning their plan because of one.
Yeah, anybody can make panic moves.
Anybody can make panic moves. There may be an NFL team or two making a panic move here in the next couple of weeks, Bill, as we approach the NFL draft. We approach a quarterback class that could be very compelling, still a lot up in the air. I will say this feels unique to me in that I think even a couple of years ago when we had a lot of quarterbacks going pretty high, I think you have to go back to maybe that Baker Mayfield class where, you know, there were maybe five guys going in the first round and we weren't sure which order they would go or if, you know, Baker Mayfield could have been a mid-round pick, he could have been the first overall pick as he was. Not maybe as dramatic of a disparity in terms of opinions about the quarterbacks in this class, but we're sitting here, it's a couple weeks before the draft, and there's been multiple favorites to go with the first overall pick, and I don't know if the guy who goes number one is a guy who other teams would even consider drafting, which is a really fascinating situation as we approach the first overall pick and the Carolina Panthers, who traded up. So Bill, today we are going to talk about at least four of the quarterbacks in this year's class. And I want to get your perspective as someone who follows the college game more closely than anybody on the planet about Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson, and Will Levis, their pros, their cons, and how they translate to the professional level. And so where do we start? Is there a fair place to start without implicitly showing some sort of bias about who should go number one?
Well, I mean, we can certainly start with the good ones. I should qualify. I should be fair and say, like, the guys who were particularly good in college. I think, you know, the Josh Allen experience has been, was a chastening one for me and plenty of others when it comes to ceiling versus floor and potential and all those other things.
Sure.
But of the five, of the four to five that we'll talk about, two were clearly much better than the others over the course of a longer period of time. And I figured we'd probably start there.
Okay. I'm going to guess that you're talking about Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. Correct. Crossing my fingers. Correct. Okay, good. We made it that far. Did not embarrass myself in the first minute of the show by picking the wrong quarterbacks who are actually good. Let's start with the actually good ones. We'll start with Bryce Young because I'll say he has been on the upswing, at least in terms of the odds at Caesars, other places. He has gone from being a favorite to go number two to the favorite to go number one in some places. And so I feel like there is this tiny elephant in the room with Bryce Young that we have to start with. We'll get to everything else about his play, but Bill, let me just start with this. I'm going to ask you to execute a thought exercise with me.
Okay.
Bill, make me an argument for why Bryce Young's size will matter at the NFL level and why his size won't matter at the NFL level based on him being most likely the smallest quarterback prospect
well, ever? Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, the reason to think it won't work is simply because, you know, the NFL's been around a while. And if you don't have an example of a guy that resembles 13 other guys who have succeeded in the pros, much less one, it does kind of, it's, I don't know if you'd call it a red flag, but it does make you at least a little bit concerned. He is a small dude. And, you know, not just skinny, not just, you know, below, I don't want to say he's short because he's taller than I am, I think. Sure. And I don't want to admit that I'm short. So, but as far as NFL quarterbacks go, he's short and skinny. And what's the best comp? Kyler Murray, except he's not nearly that fast. Mm-hmm. And he uses his legs in a completely different way. That's not a very good comp. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason to worry. It's just that nobody like him has ever succeeded at a high level in the NFL before. The reason not to worry is he's an incredible college quarterback with a good arm. And what's the drawback of being skinny? You get hit really hard. Nobody hits him. You know, he's not taken off downfield to gain huge yards on the ground much of the time, except in kind of really important kind of moments. And he just doesn't really get hit. So what does it matter if you're skinny then, if you're able to get the ball out of your hands really, really quickly? And I mean, that's the first thing you notice watching him, or at least the first thing I noticed from the start of his starting campaign at Alabama is, I mean, ball just as soon as he knows where he's going to throw it, ball's out of his hands in about, you know, a tenth of a second. Mm-hmm. And that has served him really well. He was one of the most fun quarterbacks to watch in recent years. And in 2022, you know, what the drawbacks of sometimes trying to evaluate an Alabama quarterback are that, you know, his supporting cast is so perfect. What can mm-hmm. we really learn about him? His supporting cast wasn't really perfect last year. His receivers were fine. I mean, he's still good for college football, but not amazing. His offensive line certainly didn't do him a ton of favors in terms of mm-hmm. pass protection. Lots of penalties. So he was facing more second or third and longs than normal. And, you know, that ramped up the degree of difficulty for him. And he threw for 3,300 yards and 32 touchdowns. And, you know, Alabama still ranked, what, top 20 in passing success rate. And mm-hmm. when he scrambled for double digit yards pretty much every time. And mm-hmm. he was really, really good. It's just, we'll see if that translates or not. I think it will, but I understand if there's hesitation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the supporting cast. It's going to come up with a couple of these players because in his Heisman year, he had a legit number one and number two in terms of rounds at the NFL level with Jameson Williams, first round pick to the Lions, and John Metchie, the second round pick for the Texans, who unfortunately has been battling leukemia since he was drafted by Houston. This past year, Jermaine Burden and Ja'Cory Brooks, not exactly regarded as the same caliber of receiver. You mentioned how that impacted the situations that Bryce Young found himself in. But in terms of his play-to-play performance, like, did you see him struggle more? Did you see him find solutions, not having those sort of, you know, easy buttons, to steal a Nate Tice term, as I steal all the time, for making his life easier within the offense? Like, did he look like he was able to overcome maybe that downgrade in terms of receiver talent?
Yeah, I mean, I think he probably, I'm trying to pull up the numbers real quick here. It wouldn't surprise me if he scrambled more last year mm-hmm. On average, just because things collapsed on him a little quicker. There's that famous play towards the end of the Texas game where, you know, I don't remember if it was a corner or an outside linebacker blitzed and there was nobody mm-hmm. there to block him and he just ducks and then runs for 15 yards and then sets up the game winning field goal. Like mm-hmm. It really did just feel like the degree of difficulty went up on him, and he still produced basically the same stats. His QBR was basically the same. It was 87.2 in 2021 and 86.2 last year. You know, more yards per drop back. He had to throw a little further downfield, but he did it. He took half the number of sacks last year, despite the second and longs and third and longs. And mm-hmm. and again, we're talking about Alabama, so it's not like, you know, he was playing for Well, insert team you don't mind, you know,
disparaging
insulting here, but you know, it's still, for an Alabama quarterback, he had to deal with more than we've seen in a while. And he not only really kind of matched his 2021 stats, in some cases he exceeded them.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jets Pizza location near you. Again, try Jets Signature 8-Corner Pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned his ability to get the ball out quickly when he knows where he wants to go with the football. But when he doesn't necessarily have that open receiver, we've seen an ability, like you alluded, whether it's as a scrambler, whether it's as a player who extends the play and then finds an open receiver, you know, the ability to extend the play and create out of sequence. And I think about the last quarterback to hit the NFL who was really dinged for his height, and that was Russell Wilson, who until last year did that really well at the pro level. It became an essential part of his game, and one of the reasons why there are concerns about Russell Wilson slowing down and not being the guy he was in years past is because he maybe can't do that quite as well in terms of creating out of structure. So do you think Bryce Young has to do that to succeed at the NFL level, or can it be like a Drew Brees where he can succeed even though he's smaller strictly as a pocket passer?
Yeah, I think as long as he didn't develop any bad habits last year, I'm not too worried, because he has done fine in the pocket too. It's not, I don't think, you know, what we saw with Baker Mayfield in what his second year was, it seemed like every defensive coordinator was able to figure out, like, okay, come at him from this direction, he's going to scramble back into the right, or just little tendencies where suddenly he was doing all of his bad things on every single play. And it took him a little while to overcome that, if he did at all. I don't think it's like that. He really does seem to try to focus on staying in the pocket. And maybe Drew Brees is a good, he's quicker than Drew Brees. But if he can have the quick release that Drew Brees has, then that's probably the most favorable comp you can come up with. Cause he doesn't want to leave, but he just does it when he has to. And he's really good when he has to do it.
Mm-hmm. What about his arm strength? Because you look at the numbers last year, and like we said, not with superstar receivers, he was fifth in the NFL in QBR on throws 20 or more yards downfield. So because he's smaller, he doesn't have he's a slight person relative to other NFL quarterbacks. Are there concerns about his arm?
Well, I think it's hard to tell because, you know, because the release is so fast, the ball gets out, you know, that extra beat anyway. So it was hard to tell. I mean, he doesn't have an Anthony Richardson arm. But I think it qualifies as good enough, especially if he gets it out that fast that he gains an extra couple miles per hour because of that. It's not something that really cost him any. When he's scrambling, I don't think he's looking 30 yards downfield by any means. But no, when especially from the pocket, when he had a guy come open deep, or that he thought was going to come open deep, he got the ball there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what matters, I guess, at the end of
right.
the day.
Right. Yeah. No, like he's not. Yeah. This isn't a Levis Richardson situation, but it's not a weak arm by any means.
You've disparaged Will Levis and Anthony Richardson, and yet you keep coming back to them as, oh, well, they have these.
I know why arms. They're evaluated where they're evaluated. And they definitely have stronger arms than Bryce Young.
Okay. Someone who does have a strong arm, though, is CJ Stroud, who might seem like he is perhaps this middle ground between someone who the sort of the unpolished, brilliance possibly of an Anthony Richardson, and the slight concerns about Bryce Young, where he's not necessarily prototypical size, he's not Will Levis size, but certainly bigger than Bryce Young. But what I want to start with CJ Stroud is the quality of teammate, because you go back to 2021, he has Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, who were, I believe, number one and two, or number two and number one in the offensive rookie of the year voting at the NFL level, and Jackson
Smith. And they weren't even the leading receiver, yeah.
And Jackson Smith and Jigba, who is number one. And then last year, you have Olave graduate, Wilson graduates, Smith and Jigba's hurt for a decent chunk of the year with a quote-unquote hamstring issue. And then you have Marvin Harrison Jr., who might be a better prospect than any of them, and Emeka Ibuka step up, and they both have 1,000-plus yard seasons. So how much of C.J. Stroud's success would you say is the product of having just, you know, multiple round one NFL-caliber receivers on every single play he has to work with?
Yeah, it's hard. It's so hard to evaluate. And I know, like, one of the tropes now is, you know, Ohio State doesn't produce good pro quarterbacks because, you know, obviously, it's been a minute here. Haskins obviously struggled early. Mm-hmm. Fields is still unfinished. Whatever he ends up becoming, whether it's good or not, he's clearly not there yet. And so I understand the concern. All I can really say is that Stroud isn't either one of those guys. He is different other than just being a good quarterback. He doesn't have a ton in common with either one of those guys, for better or worse. And he hits all these amazing receivers. He hits them in stride. He threw the most accurate ball, I think, of any of these quarterbacks. And wow. Maybe only Young was particularly close. And so, you know, he did what he was asked to do. That's all we know for sure. Because Ohio State's offense, the thing about it is, not only do they always have 13 five-star receivers they're throwing to, but it's also just been the most brilliantly spaced offense in college. Like, everybody, they go sideline to sideline. They create space no matter what. Even if you know what's coming, you can't really stop it because there's so much open area to maneuver in. And mm-hmm. you know, he had such risk-free opportunities to throw to, you know, Jackson Smith and Jigba a couple of years ago, where he can throw a quick hook route and it'll go for 29 yards. Like, it's I get it. I understand the concerns about degree of difficulty, and they're not wrong. I mean, I think overall he handled pressure pretty well. From a numbers standpoint, there were times, you know, especially in last year's Michigan game, where things seemed to catch up to him a little bit, and he lost confidence, and you could kind of tell it. And maybe when he started to realize he had to force the issue, because that's another thing, Ohio State rarely trailed in his time there. So, you know, there wasn't a ton of adversity in that regard. But, you know, there were moments where maybe he pressed a little bit and you started to realize that he didn't have that high level of adversity training yet. Mean that he can't learn when he gets it, but he hasn't gotten it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think about Justin Fields, where, not saying they're similar as quarterbacks, but just in terms of the level of comfort Justin Fields had for most of his pro career, and then going into the exact opposite situation with the Bears, where it's questionable coaching, it's not much of an offensive line, the receivers are pretty bad, and we've seen him be a totally different quarterback, not only in terms of how he's performed, because of course crazy sack rates, like a 14% sack rate last year, subpar interception rate, subpar completion percentage, and he's been an incredible runner, which is something that was not the focal point of his game at Ohio State. So I guess I wonder, when I look at Stroud, do you think, as part of that adjustment period to the professional game, do you think we see him become more of a runner just out of sheer self-preservation, depending on where he ends up?
Yeah, well, I mean, we saw this hint, like, for the first time ever, he was really running the ball semi-frequently in the semifinals last year against Georgia, and he looked pretty good doing it. He's definitely not, his strides aren't as long as Justin Fields. He's not as fast a runner. And over the course of his entire career, I mean, last year he barely ever scrambled. He didn't take sacks either because he got the ball out of his hands so fast. So he wasn't, when Fields came out, we kind of, all the college folks said, like, if he struggles, it's probably because he really does. He could take all the time he needed to figure things out at the college level. And when somebody was able to pressure him, it kind of it would like surprised him a little bit because it happens so infrequently. Haskins was kind of the same in that regard, even though he obviously wasn't as fast. Stroud did get the ball out very quickly. And so maybe that's a sign that he processes things quickly. Maybe those are just he's looking to get the ball. Like, he's not looking to make a 30 yard gain. He's just trying to get the ball out and move the chains. Maybe those are good signs, but there's no question that just like Haskins, just like Fields, he hadn't gotten a ton of on-field adversity in his time before he hit the pros. And we don't know how he'll respond completely until we see it.
At the same time, though, I think about Joe Burrow, where you know there was a limited track record of success, and he had Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase. At the college level, he had Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He had a decent offensive line and posted one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen. I think we could have raised these same concerns about Joe Burrow heading into the draft. And granted, he has T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, which isn't exactly chop liver at wide receiver, but he's done just fine as a pro. He's adapted. So.
Yeah.
Is it fair to take Fields' sort of struggles and apply those to Stroud, or is it just, there's going to be an adjustment period for any quarterback? How do you think you translate that to the pro level?
Yeah, and I mean, Burrow's another guy. He probably holds the ball a little too long sometimes trying to make plays, he's taken a good number of hits in the pros because of it. Maybe we see that from Stroud as well, but I do think he's kind of coming at it from the opposite angle. Like, if there's a concern there, it's that he's not looking downfield enough, or he's settling too quickly, and maybe that becomes an issue in the way that it has for a completely different set of quarterbacks. But I mean, you're right. We always we say Ohio State's quarterbacks struggle in the pros, but if Joe Burrow didn't, then it's not just a talent thing. It really does come. And I've said this a couple of times now, but I do think where we screw up a lot in our evaluations is assuming that just because a guy hasn't had to do something means he'll be bad at it. Like, he might not be, we just don't know. And with Stroud, we don't know how he would handle being dumped into a Chicago Bears-esque situation. And inevitably he'd have some bad habits, but what would they be? We don't really know that. It does make him intriguing. I was worried you're going to make me rank these guys in terms of who I'd pick, and you still might. I don't know. But I don't know. Between Stroud and Young, I think I lean Young, but I completely get it if you lean Stroud, because he really was an outstanding quarterback.
That was a bad decision on your part, Bill. I wasn't going to, but now I think I have to. So, well, I mean, I know you're not going to have Richardson or Levis 3-1 or 2, so we could. That's at least half the battle you've had.
That's right.
The problem. It's really just two sets of rankings between 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. We'll get to that a little bit later. I'll give you the chance to stew on it a little bit before we get to ranking them. But let's get to Anthony Richardson. I feel like we've had the widest range of opinions on Anthony Richardson. I see people who I respect who have said he might be the best quarterback in this draft class, just saddled with an offense and a set of receivers that did not help him at Florida. And you look at the numbers, there's some stuff in here that's so weird. Like, he held the ball for an average of 3.2 seconds, which is the longest in the nation, but he only took sacks on 3.5% of his dropbacks. Yeah. How is that possible?
Yeah, no, 11% of pressures became sacks is one of the things that I try to follow. That doesn't make a lot of sense considering how much he was running around. Like, Bryce Young was at 15%, that sack to pressure ratio. CJ Stroud was at 12%, except he didn't scramble. I will say that, because we inevitably lump Richardson and Levis together here, if you're drafting a guy based solely on tools and nothing else, I'm absolutely picking Richardson. I've begrudgingly come around in recent years. Cause I mean, long ago, my stock line when ranting about this stuff is, you can't just because you pick a quarterback in the top five doesn't make him a top five talent. Why are you, don't take a reach, why take such a risk? And I understand now, like, just the financial benefits of picking a quarterback versus other positions and all these things. Like, I get it. I understand that, you know, taking a risk on a guy who with tools and a 54% completion rate. I understand that this is probably a more tolerable risk than what I would have thought 5 or 10 years ago, but I still, it's been really funny watching film Twitter. The little overlap of the people who do a lot of film stuff, but also know the analytics, kind of know the main points of the analytics side of things, all talking themselves into Richardson simultaneously, because you just have to see him scramble and make one perfect pinpoint throw 40 yards downfield or whatever. And it all starts to make sense. But he didn't have an amazing receiving core, but he didn't have a terrible receiving core. Ricky Pearsall's good. Justin Shorter was solid. They had a lot of pretty good guys. Mm-hmm. And it does concern me, 58% completion rate or 54% completion rate. It does concern me, even if his scrambling was pretty incredible.
I mean, he's clearly an incredible athlete. There's no question there, but what did this offense look like? Because, I mean, by all accounts, there's been issues taken with, you know, the layups that Richardson had or lack thereof. There's been questions about, you know, how many solutions he was given in the passing game. Obviously, you know, there's been drop concerns. But according to the numbers, more than 26% of Richardson's completions were to wide open receivers, which is more than anybody in this quarterback class. So what did the Florida offense look like? And is there anything from it that can translate to the pro game? If you were going to say, okay, this is what a successful offense could look like with Richardson here in the short term.
Yeah. I mean, it really was unclassifiable in a lot of regards, because there were a lot of passes to wide open guys, but at the same time, there was a very high percentage of completions of 20 plus yards. And usually if you're throwing a wide open guys, it probably means that you're throwing a guy's 3 yards downfield, a running back who drifted out of the pocket or whatever. So that's how you kind of scheme those things to steal some yards here and there, but he was doing that. And then also, so many of his completions were going way downfield, but his interception rate wasn't terrible. It really is just kind of a dizzying, the stats. There were some really, really, really good stats and a lot of really, really, really bad ones. And the offensive line stats were terrible, which is something to keep in mind too. And in the end, I would be so nervous if I was a GM thinking about drafting him, but whoever does, I get it. I don't think I could pick over Stroud and Young, even if his ceiling might be higher just athletically, but I do get it. And he did make a lot of big plays. And when you're making big plays, then that at least a little excuses a poor success rate or a poor completion rate, at least a little bit.
Okay. Is there any way you would feel comfortable playing him for a significant amount of time in 2023?
Well, that's another mistake I've made so many times over the past, is so many of these guys in the first round, I'm like, okay, well, as long as you give them a redshirt year, so to speak. I think I was saying that about Blaine Gabbert. And that's another thing I've had to begrudgingly accept, is if you're picking a guy in the top 10, you're not sitting him unless you absolutely have to. Knowing that he can escape pressure, knowing that, he's big enough that, he can probably take some hits, that's if you've got a top 10 draft pick, which probably means you were bad last year in most cases, let him run around and take some hits and learn some lessons and all that. And maybe that ends up okay. But you do worry about bad habits in that regard. You always worry about guys just forgetting the good things and having all their bad things magnified, and I certainly would have to think it's a problem here, but I do I get it. Top 10, I can accept Richardson in the top 10. Next guy we're going to talk about, I don't think I can accept him in the top 10.
Oh no, Will Levis, not a top 10 quarterback according to you. Is it because he just happens to look more like a quarterback than anything else? Is that the issue?
Yeah, I think he's the closest. People see Josh Allen in him, and really? I think that's the biggest issue. And I mean, the dude's big. He can, he's not very fast, but I mean, he can, when he takes a hit, he's given one back, and he's a super tough guy. But it seems like his stock's gone down a little bit. And I think I've felt a little relieved about that for him. Just because, you know, some of these guys, you know, the expectation levels are having to see the field quickly end up being major problems. So I understand the arm strength thing. It was funny when my friends at Stats Bomb were, you know, they've been working on their American football product, and they have, like, you know, average velocity for a lot of the throws and stuff because they've got all the film stuff, and they can measure distance and all that stuff. And basically his accuracy levels were the same as Stetson Bennett's, which was very confusing and maybe inaccurate. I don't know, but I think his bigness and toughness are kind of buying him a little bit more credibility than his passing actually did. And his running actually wasn't all that impressive. So you can't really draw a comp to Josh Allen there. So we'll see. I think his processing time isn't amazing. He can certainly throw hard and all that stuff, but I do have a lot more questions for him simply because everything we were just talking about with the other guys, you know, he's regarded as an athlete and all this other stuff. Well, 33% of his pressures became sacks. He took 36 sacks last year, and his line was bad, but Richardson's was kind of two, and he didn't take 36 sacks. So I am concerned. I get the arm talent thing, but I am concerned.
Is there anything about his game as a passer outside of arm strength that was particularly impressive at the college level?
Well, he beat man coverage. I will say that. Like, even last year when his receiving core wasn't as good, like just looking at his man versus zone splits, you know, 8.5 yards per attempt against zone adjusted yards per attempt. I look at that, you know, you get the 20 yard bonus for touchdowns and the 45 yard penalty for interceptions. He was at 8.5 against the zone, which is pretty good. And 9.3 against man. His QBR against man was 78. That's, you know, that can be a good sign because he wasn't throwing to open receivers downfield, you know? So if he's playing against man defense, he's probably thrown into pretty tight windows. And he, you know, his guys, the rate of passes thrown at them that were deemed catchable by Sports Info Solution was pretty high, and they caught them. So I do think he's got more accuracy than maybe the stereotype that we kind of build around these guys. He's got more accuracy there. It's just he probably doesn't have the same athleticism that he's been given credit for too. So trade off.
Yeah, certainly feels like a trade off. Is it fair to say that he had some concerns about the people around him? He lost Liam Cohen, the offensive coordinator, to the Rams. Wandell Robinson was drafted by the Giants in the second round. You know, kind of some of the people he was depending upon back in 2021 were not back in 2022. So were there concerns about him not having a lot around him last year? That maybe
no question. His supporting cast got worse. There's no question about that at all. I, you know, in my defense and in kind of, you know, dropping him down a little bit here, as I was saying these things a year ago after his good season, and, you know, he was top 20 in total QBR, but not top five, you know, in 2021 as well. He was good, but not great. And yeah, I don't know. He's one of those guys in a lot of ways, like Carson Wentz was long ago, where, you know, you watch him play and, you know, and you start to think, you know, I think he could maybe stick in the NFL. And then you realize people are talking about him as a first rounder, and the train just zoomed on by. And I was still trying to weigh how good a pro I thought he might be, not whether he would be a first rounder or not.
Well, I mean, Carson Wentz as a second overall pick, as a guy who was expected to be one of the best players in football, who got a contract like he was a franchise quarterback, was overrated. But Carson Wentz, if he had been, you know, a second round pick and then not been given a significant contract, would have been kind of a nice little healthy surprise. He was nearly the MVP one year at the NFL when everything went right for him. So I guess, you know, when it comes to Will Levis, is there a inflection point where he goes from being a guy where you're afraid to pick him to a guy who feels like he might be a good value?
You mean like in the
draft,
within the first round or so,
or in the second round, if you think that's where he should go?
Yeah, no, I mean, I do think this is a, you know, keep him out of the top 10, make it, you know, lower the expectations a little bit, and potentially let him. We were saying with Richardson, I feel comfortable letting him scramble around and whatnot, and kind of get some of his, you know, get some reps and figure out what he can and can't do and all that. Mm-hmm. I put Levis in that situation and he's taken way too many hits because he does take a lot of hits. And so get him in a situation on a better team in the back half of the first round or something where he's maybe protected a little bit more if he has to play, or in the second round where maybe he's not thrown into the starting lineup immediately. Those are going to be the good situations because, again, I do think he's got accuracy, but he does seem to trust his athleticism way more than he has a reason to. And it's gotten him hurt. It's gotten him hit a lot. And that could continue to happen with bigger, faster guys in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a good sign if you're talking about a quarterback prospect and you're like, oh, he's taking too many hits in college, let alone at their professional
level. 36 is so many sacks to take in at the college level. It's pretty crazy.
That is ridiculous. Okay, we have time for your fifth quarterback prospect. So you're going to get to rank all five of these guys when we finish up with our last question. The player who led the led college football last year in total QBR was Hendon Hooker of Tennessee, who then finished by tearing his ACL. Bill, how old is Hendon Hooker?
He's like 38, right?
And he's 30. He's gone up since we talked before the show. He was 34.
Yeah. No, I mean, he was a guy for like 3 years who had decent potential at Virginia Tech. And for whatever reason, he and Fuente, the coach there at Virginia Tech, just didn't like each other apparently. And so he ended up going to a far more favorable situation at Tennessee. And I mean, yeah, the age thing is real. And I mean, he's coming off of injury. So I get that, you know, his stock is going to suffer because of that. I'm also very curious what the NFL at this point thinks of basically the Josh Heupel system. It produced Drew Lock, my boy Drew Lock. It is the fastest system in college football. Josh Heupel's one of the only guys who still really, really utilizes tempo at a certain level. Like most college defenses have accounted for tempo to a lot of and it's more of a situational thing now. But Tennessee still does it all the time, and they're really, really good at it. And Josh Heupel's system's also, this affects Jalin Hyatt if you're talking to receivers at some point. He's figured out a life hack with the slot receiver position. Like his slot receivers always average like 17, 19, 20 yards per catch. Just lots and lots and lots of, quick hitters on the inside and lots of go routes on the outside. And he just has constantly the most successful slot receivers in the game. Hendon Hooker was able to, throw lobs to Jalin Hyatt and Hyatt ended up catching 74% of the passes thrown his way for 19 yards per catch. So that obviously did brilliant things for Hooker's for his stats overall. And he ended up, 70% completion rate, 27-2 touchdowns to interceptions. It was great. But mobility was a big part of his game early on. And it still was last year, 7 yards per carry, non-sack. He scrambled a decent, not necessarily too much, but a decent amount. But let's go back to that sack to pressure ratio, 32%, almost the same as Levis. He took 23 sacks last year. His mobility wasn't amazing when it comes to escapability. And now he's coming off a knee injury too. So that does, I like him more than Levis, but if I'm a GM, I'm still putting him fifth on this list that we're about to come up with because of the age thing and what that does for your contracts and everything else. And because of the lack of escapability overall.
Yeah. I mean, you're looking at Brandon Whedon, I believe, as the only quarterback older to be drafted in the first round. I think John Beck, who was,
oh, John Beck. I forgot John Beck. Yeah.
Would have been a second round pick, but you're drawing pretty slim if you're trying to find quarterbacks who are Hendon Hooker's age. And neither of those guys turned out to be particularly exciting draft picks at the pro level. So very curious situation there with Hendon Hooker. But all right, Bill, we'll finish up. You brought it up, so you can't blame me.
Damn it.
I know Hendon Hooker's number five.
Yeah.
Rank these quarterbacks from 5 to 1. If you're drafting as an NFL general manager, tell me where you're ranking them and tell me the earliest point in the draft where you would be comfortable taking them.
Ooh, okay. Well, yes, five is, I think you can figure out the list at this point. I think I've dropped enough hints. Five is Hooker. I don't expect him to go in the first round. I know that, you know, there are wafting rumors, and honestly, like landing at the bottom of the first round where he could be like a backup to a good QB, that might be the perfect situation for him. But yeah, I would not, because of the age, because of the mobility and everything else, I would definitely not have him in the first round. Anywhere after first is fine. I'm really, really curious, because I do think the red flags are red enough for GMs to talk themselves out of this when it comes down to it. And I'm curious where he ends up landing, but he would not be a first rounder. Levis, I would probably not have him in the first round either, honestly, but I understand how this works, in probably bottom half somewhere, I guess. I don't know. Like, he's been up and down. What's the latest positioning for Levis at this point?
Latest is in where is the furthest he's falling,
like,
or where?
Well, yeah, like the most recent mocks that are coming out.
Mel Kiper's most recent mock, as I will try to figure this out in real time.
I had that
time.
Pulled up like an hour ago, and then I closed it.
Can't be that hard to find. It's on ESPN.com.
That's right.
Will Levis is going fourth to the Colts.
Okay, never mind. He didn't fall at all. No, I would struggle having him in the first round, because he's going to get hit a lot. But again, you know, get those bottom of the first good teams, and that'd be a much more positive situation. Fill in on with for injury, looking good, all that stuff. But I don't see it. And I didn't see it with Josh Allen. That's fine. I was wrong once. And only once ever.
The first time.
That's right. Don't look at what I said about Blaine Gabbert. I don't trust that at all. I do think number three on the list is Anthony Richardson. And while I would personally struggle to have him in the top 10, I understand why, and I'm okay with him going there, because, you know, if you hit on Anthony Richardson, you're set for a very, very long time, and you are going to make a lot of money as a GM or whatever. He's got a lot more tools, and he does get away from sacks better than these other guys who scramble a lot. So that's very, very important, especially with, unlike Bryce Young. Bryce Young gets away from him, but he's not going to suddenly rip off a 35-yard run. And Richardson did that quite a bit. So you'll struggle early, especially if you're drafted in the top 10. But it is, I think I understand the risk there. Let's see. Have I changed my mind from like 20 minutes ago? I guess I still have CJ Stroud too.
Wow. Okay.
Because there will be a, you know, again, maybe he'll handle the adversity fine pretty quickly, but there will be a bit of a learning curve. Somehow he dealt with less adversity than Alabama's quarterback last year. And he did. Yeah. I don't want to say too many negative things. He's really good. He hits guys in stride. He's very accurate. And if he goes number one, awesome. But I think I would have him number two overall behind my guy. The impossible to prototype Bryce Young. He made me laugh out loud too many times last year. I think that's really my evaluation standard, is how many times am I so shocked by what you just did that I laugh? He did it a lot. He's really, really fun and good. And I don't think he'll take too many hits. Therefore, his whole skinniness issue won't be as much of a problem as it, you know, otherwise might be.
So it sounds like Stroud and Young, you're comfortable taking anywhere. Richardson, first round somewhere.
Yeah, I'm fine with top 10 with Richardson. I get it.
Top 10 for Richardson. You get it, but you don't sound like you believe in it.
I would just, you know, I said, you know, if you hit on him, then you're going to get 13 more jobs. You're set for life in the NFL if you pick Richardson and it hits. But if it doesn't, you know, I guess all GMs are getting fired pretty soon anyway. So,
wow. You
know, just go ahead and take the chance anyway.
Very, very Kyle Shanahan nihilist approach.
That's right.
No one's going to have a job soon anyway.
That's right. We're all getting fired at some point.
We're all getting laid off.
Have some fun.
And then we'll Levis out of the first round and Hendon Hooker. Would you consider taking Hendon Hooker over Will Levis?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of who I would rather have on my team, like right now, all contracts and future aside, I think I would take Hooker. But I understand the age gap and the knee issues and everything else. So I understand Levis, but I would certainly, if we're talking a 1 year contract next year only, then yeah, Hooker probably.
There we go. Well, he's probably going to retire at some point.
That's right. After. I mean, he's already. Yeah, the arthritis is 40s. Kicking in.
The arthritis. Jesus. I hope Hendon Hooker does not listen to this podcast. He's going to be very mad at Bill Connolly for making those comments.
I said he's better than the number four prospect in the draft, apparently. So, that's, you know, there's true. That.
That's true, but he's creaky, is what he also said about him. He said he's about to break down. That's not going to happen. All these quarterbacks are going to be great. Bill Connolly raising concerns. No reason. These quarterbacks are all great. That's how draft works. You draft a guy, he's great. That's it. No prospects fail. No prospects bust. That's Bill, you're going to write about all these quarterbacks very soon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I have a fatal flaws piece. As you see, I'm well prepared to talk about these fatal flaws. That'll come out next week on ESPN.com.
Hendon Hooker's fatal flaw is risk of falling.
Yeah, he's near old age.
If you put arthritis in that column, I will Venmo you. I will Venmo you $20, Bill.
Awesome. Well, challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted. There we go. All right, Bill. Where can people check out the rest of your stuff?
I mean, I use for years, I've just been saying, go to Twitter. It's all there. I mean, and Twitter still exists now. So I guess that's still the answer. But yes, ESPN.com, good amount on the college football page, decent amount on the soccer page too. A little tennis, you know, it's all there at ESPN.
A renaissance man, some would say.
I mean, anybody who says it, I'm fine with it, but I don't think too many people say it.
I'm saying it here. Renaissance man, staff writer, Bill Connolly. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Right. Thanks so much to my friend Bill Connolly for hopping on today to break down the quarterbacks in this year's draft class. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Definitely a lot still up in the air as we're a couple weeks away from the draft, but definitely some interesting things happening. Don't know what's going to happen with the third overall pick. Don't know what's going to happen with these quarterbacks. Don't know what's going to happen with Bijan Robinson, who I wrote about this week for ESPN.com. Also have my mock draft column where I just do a trade for every single pick, the dumbest column of the entire year, not just for me, maybe from anybody when it comes to the NFL, but seems to be one people enjoy. So that one's coming out next week as well. Hope you guys are doing great, and more audio about the draft and the NFL offseason coming here on the Bill Bardenwell Show.